The size of the civilian workforce is on the decline at the Department of Defense, but three other agencies plan to add 5,000 civilian employees each in the next year. Larry Allen's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and he publishes the Week Ahead newsletter. He says the rebalancing means federal contracting opportunities will start growing in new places. You find business intelligence opportunities all kinds of different areas, Larry. Why is it that folks should pay attention to where hiring is going to happen to start to mine opportunities? Thanks for coming on.
Certainly, Francis. I think it's important to know where federal agencies are adding people, because this spells opportunity for contractors who can provide support to those missions. Also, it's notable because we've seen federal agencies, generally speaking, shed employee levels over the last several years with tight budgets and things of that nature. So it's really notable that we have some agencies that are adding staff. And staff are added. If you're in the furniture or furnishings business, for example, hey, those are good opportunities for you. Similarly, if you're providing seat-based IT services, the more seats there are, the better that can be for your company.
You write, Department of Justice, Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Agriculture, and others slated to add 5,000 more employees each. Overall, the federal civilian workforce expected to see a slight increase from 2014 levels, bringing the government back to 2.1 FTE. That's about the same as 2013 that you point out. Where's the best place to go and dig up this kind of stuff, besides your newsletter, of course?
Well, we have our sources. One of the things that I use, Francis, frankly, is the Federal News Radio website. It's always a good source of information. But also... if you are going out and looking at the headlines, you have a great advantage in the Washington, D.C. region, because both your print and over-the-air news sources cover these types of things, and it gives you a very good idea of the trends that are happening. Just by looking at the headlines and translating the federal agencies that work on those core issues into the ones that are going to be at the front line doing the work.
You also, in the newsletter this week, are writing about the coming release that my colleague Jason Miller wrote about the draft RFP for Alliant 2. Jason reported on some of the details, and those are mentioned, as I said, on our website. What's the deal behind the deal, though, do you think, with Alliant 2?
Well, I think the real deal behind Alliant 2, there are two, Francis. One is Alliant has proven to be a very popular contracting vehicle, probably more popular than even GSA originally envisioned. Certainly, it's taken some business away, not just from GSA schedules, but probably from other indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts. So it's a force to be reckoned with. On the other side, Alliant 2 is most likely going to be following in the footsteps of OASIS, and you have a lot to learn from GSA's OASIS contract. And what that generally means is if you're a commercial IT supplier that does business in both the commercial and government worlds, Alliant 2 is going to be a lot more difficult for you to work with, because it's going to look a lot more like a government contract. It's going to have government-only requirements in it, particularly things for having DCAA-certified cost accounting systems. That's certainly something you're not required to do commercially. They're also going to make the evaluation factors look remarkably like OASIS. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. But again, these are things that play the strengths of companies that are established in the government and understand how the government works. Doesn't mean you can't play if you're a commercial IT firm, but it does mean that you're going to have to learn the government dialect if you want to be successful.
And you allude to that In the newsletter this week, you write, it's quite likely, for example, GSA will require primes to have DCAA-approved cost accounting systems as a condition of award. I could see, just with that one sentence, somebody who's not well-versed in this stuff reading that and having their eyes glaze over.
Well, you know who was a big surprise to, Francis, when that was initially pointed out? DCAA. They actually had no idea that GSA had made this a requirement in OASIS and was poised to do the same thing for Alliant, and that raised a few eyebrows inside the Department of Defense, where you had an outside agency saying, well, you need to have this DOD capability in order to do business on our contract. So it's not just contractors. It caught DOD by surprise, although I'm sure they're pleased because, you know, so much of DOD's money is spent against these contracts. So if you're a contractor, then you need to either be DCAA approved or be working towards DCAA approval. And if we're seeing this, Francis, on OASIS and Alliant 2, it probably is not too much of a stretch to say that we'll start seeing this on other contracts that come out from other agencies.
Larry Allen's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners and publishes the Week Ahead newsletter. And another item you have this week is about category management. You were struck, as I was when I learned about it, that Tom Sharp and others from GSA, Dan Tangerlini on one occasion, went to the White House to brief President Obama on category management. And I have to confess, when Jason Miller reported that, I went, really?
Well, you know, Jason's a reliable reporter, so we have to take him at his word.
Yeah, the issue wasn't with the reporting. The issue was, of all the things the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, would care about, with all due respect to my friends at GSA, I never expected category management would have been one of them.
Well, frankly, I've spoken to some of the people at GSA who did go over to the White House, and they were, of course, blown away by the fact that the Oval Office didn't just have them over once, but twice.
Right.
So clearly the president liked what he heard the first time in terms of category management and how GSA is trying to reduce acquisition overhead throughout government. It really is something that should catch everyone's attention. If you're not familiar with what category management is, then you probably need to become familiar with it because it could affect the way you do business with your federal partners. Really remarkable because it really focuses in on this White House's priority to get a handle on how the government operates and to reduce costs through acquisition wherever possible and deliver what they believe to be better value for the taxpayer, and it's kind of a hallmark, really, you see, of a number of Democratic administrations where they really care about good government management, and they drill down to this type of level that you just don't see every day.
I am struck, too, by this very serious nature of category management and the things that go along with it. I heard this week that GSA and NITAC and NASA SOUP are working together on different ways to execute category management, to share information on pricing, to share information on negotiations and stuff. And I guess as a taxpayer, I think that's probably a good idea. I don't know that I am enough knowledgeable enough to have a comment on it one way or the other. But I imagine there are a lot of people in industry that scares the heck out of.
Well, I think, you know, it certainly should catch industry's attention. Because at its core, what we're talking about in category management is best-in-class buyers being the lead purchasing agents in government for what they're best-in-class at, which means they're going to be looking at a select group of contractors as potential sources. What we're really getting to here is doing business with fewer companies, doing business with companies that are going to be very sensitive about price points and very much focused on serving the federal customer.
That concept of serving the federal customer is very noble. I'm not sure that it's always what we see manifest itself when we look, if we'd look at schedules and then we look at somebody else's schedule and we look at then somebody else's schedule, I'm not sure we'd come away with that when we look at the numbers.
Well, I think that's, you look at that, and that's certainly what GSA is seeing. They see a wide disparity for similar and same items among different contractors. But, fundamentally, Francis, there are different ways that companies go to market. I think that sometimes category management can be a little bit of the I'll take one from column A and one from column B type of mentality without the understanding, really, that not everybody gets to be the cheapest buyer every day and still maintain any type of quality supply chain. So there has to be the understanding somewhere along the category management timeline that, you're going to be doing business with quality companies. You want to be doing business with quality companies. You don't want to wake up and find that all of your quality suppliers have been driven to the sidelines and that you're dealing with Yugo resellers.
Yugos. Where'd you pull that from? Like, where do you get a Yugo reference all of a sudden?
Well, Yugo, well known for being the thrifty car and the old adage.
I know exactly what it is.
I think that, category management inherently doesn't have to be that, Francis. And I think if you talk to Ann Rong at the Office of Procurement Policy, she looks at it as a good government tool. And at best, category management can be a good government tool. Taken to extremes, as I think some would take it in government, that's where you end up. You end up with people who are providing you with that low, low price that you want, but there are some other things that have come at the expense of that.
You ever ride in a Yugo?
Fortunately, no.
No, I did. I had a buddy who had one, and it was quite an experience. A 3-cylinder vehicle, the only one I've ever ridden in.
Well, going back to the days of Eastern Europe, and now they get to drive better, and the government should too.